Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we're speaking with guest expert Kevin Smokler. Kevin is a writer, documentary filmmaker, and event host with a focus on pop culture. He's the author of the book Brat Pack America, a love letter to 80s teen movies, and the director slash producer of the upcoming documentary film Vinyl Nation. Learn more at vinylnationfilm.com. Let's hear what he has to say about the murderous events that happened in Heathers, the movie. Hi, Kevin. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Rebecca, thanks for having us. This is going to be fun.
So, can you start off by giving our listeners a brief synopsis of your book, Brat Pack America, a love letter to 80s teen movies?
Yeah, the part of it that is not in the title is I had this idea that 80s teen movies were a genre that deserved the same kind of respect and analysis as action movies or romantic comedies or, you know, South American documentaries or something like that. And the angle I took was, and this is the America in Brat Pack America, was that you could take a map of America and actually put points on it where 80s teen movies happened and were filmed or said they happened fictionally. And that would be a really cool way to look at this genre of movies. So I made the capital city, Shermer, Illinois, where all the John Hughes movies happens. And of course, Heathers happens fictionally, but Heathers happens in Sherwood, Ohio. And they make kind of a big deal about what kind of place Sherwood, Ohio is in the movie.
And how does that, speak to the movie? How does its location really, I'm forgetting the word here, but speak to it.
Heathers was originally conceived as both an anti-John Hughes movie, but also a kind of 70s schlock drive-in horror movie. I think the original pitch from Daniel Waters to himself, because nobody was listening when he wrote this movie, was a teenage girl who falls in love with the Antichrist. And he was like, oh, well, that kind of movie would play at, 1:30 in the morning at the drive-in after all the kids and families had gone home, between like swinging cheerleaders and like, murder in gym class or some, mass murder in gym class or some those kind of movies. And I think that premise, like those kind of movies were long past their prime by the time he was writing Heathers. But the idea of it taking place in Ohio to me also resonated with the bumper crop of horror movies from that period. Famously, Nightmare on Elm Street takes place in Ohio, even though it was filmed on some street in Venice or something like that. And there's palm trees and sunshine and it never rains or drops below 73 degrees in that movie. Wes Craven, in a very pointed political way, wanted to make that movie set in Ohio because he grew up in a fundamentalist religious family in Ohio and was very critical of that upbringing. And he saw Nightmare on Elm Street as a movie that was highly critical about the hypocrisy of adults and the way they employed that hypocrisy to not listen to and neglect kids. So I think the location of Heather speaks to that, too. It speaks to its more modern horror movie roots. But I also think more to the point, it reminds us that it takes place in this fictionalized, idealized, in only the shallowest kind of materialistic way of a Midwestern setting. And I think it's a very like coastal view of the way people view the Midwest. Uh-huh. That the Midwest is this place with a seeming facade of where everything is fine, and underneath everybody's like cheating on their wives and murdering each other before first period. And like, I think that's a lot of what the original Heather screenplay was after.
So what is it about Heather's that makes it then a cult classic? Because I know that it wasn't well received when it first premiered.
No, and actually you ask a really good question there, because I don't know what like the Rotten Tomatoes rating was for Heather's like at the time, even though we didn't have Rotten Tomatoes at the time. But I don't know how critically Heather's was received. That's a really good question. But in terms of like making money, Heather's couldn't get arrested. Famously, I think the producer, Denise Sinovi, took out like the one ad in the LA Times that for the movie and paid for it out of her own pocket, because Laura Marr Pictures, who produced Heathers, went bankrupt like 7.5 minutes before the movie was released in March of 89. And so the people who came together to make Heathers were completely left holding the bag. And who knows if it would have been a hit otherwise, but they basically were in the worst possible circumstances when that movie came out. And so I guess we could say it's small wonder it didn't get the hearing it deserved at the movie theater, because they were going in with three pieces of chewing gum and a ball of twine. I mean,
so let's jump into the plot of the movie. The Heathers are set up as the most powerful clique in school. And while Veronica seems to be part of the group, what is the dynamic between them? Within them, I should say.
This is going to sound so pretentiously awful of me to say, but there's an almost like Shakespearean King Lear quality to it, you know, like, except there's no King Lear. There's just the daughters of King Lear arguing about like who gets which part of the kingdom. And then there's like the new one. There's also a like weird perverse Three Musketeers thing happening. You know, it's like if you're a group of three people in a fictional setting, never invite a fourth person in, because the fourth person is always trouble. Like if you're the Three Musketeers, don't invite a fourth. No D'Artagnans, please. Always bad news. No Veronicas. Maybe the Heather should have known better. Maybe this is not the time to be expanding beyond people named Heather. Because like that could be, in fact, we see the reign of Heathers at the very end. You know, this is like, I guess we could imagine Heathers before Heathers, and the three prequels are all about like the rise and reign of the Heathers, right? And the movie Heathers is about the fall of the Heathers. I guess. I hadn't thought of this until right now. So thank you for inspiring that thought. But it's like we are seeing the end of the Heathers right now. And our main character is the person responsible for that.
It's the end of the reign, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's the new monarchy is stepping in.
Yeah, what's the last line in the movie? Heather, my love, there's a new sheriff in town. which is a brilliant last line for Heather's, because it's also like it's the spirit the entire movie begins with. Like the first line of Heather's is "Dear Diary," but it could also be like, "Heather, my love, there's a new sheriff in town," because the first thing we see, of course, is the first line of the movie is, "It's your move, Heather." No, it's your move, Heather. And we learn this is the croquet scene.
Yeah. Yes.
And the first thing we do is meet the person who is responsible for the end of the power of the Heathers. So
the character of JD is established as a super cool guy with an anti-popular kid agenda. What does this character represent in the film? I mean, we're saying he's the Antichrist.
Yeah. And he's also like, there's a co-hero vibe to Heather's. I mean, I think unquestionably Veronica is the hero, but there's also like obviously this is, Heather's is clearly a movie that loves other movies. There's lots of references to other movies. It was written by someone who worked at a video store. So this is Heather's is a movie that is critical of one kind of movie, but is just in love with the very notion of movies and all of the ideas and dreams and fantasies that come from them. JD is a co-hero in the way Bonnie and Clyde are kind of co-heroes, and the way, you know, 2 years or 3 years later, Mickey and Mallory from Natural Born Killers would be kind of co-heroes. But he's also like, I got to say, I love movies that begin with a narration from the main character, particularly that begin with kind of a Dear Diary narration, because it always lets loose the possibility in the movie that what is about to happen is in the narrator's head, that it may or may not be real. I remember Sarah Jessica Parker, I believe when she was on Inside the Actors Studio, said, "We have to remember Carrie Bradshaw is a writer, so it introduces the possibility that the other three characters are fictional versions of who Carrie Bradshaw would like to see herself as, or who she would like to invent as her three best friends." And I think there's always this tantalizing little thing hanging out there that maybe JD is imaginary. Maybe JD is a work of fiction conceived by Veronica. By the way, if this movie was made a year after Fight Club, he would have been we would have found out at the end that JD was Tyler Durden, and
wow, yeah. You're blowing my mind.
Heather's 10 years later. JD is made up. Yeah.
So what is it that sets off the murderous chain of events?
Oh, shoot. So like the scene where Heather Chandler is killed is probably my favorite scene in the movie. And if you listen to it, it's like line for line. It's like there is not a wasted moment word of dialogue in that scene. And of course that happens because Heather Chandler and Veronica have gone to a Remington University party. Isn't that a great name? It's filmed at a frat house at UCLA, but like it's such a great name. It's like a Perrier ad in Esquire for the college, like something like that. And Veronica is feeling sick and she has to go home early, and Heather Chandler is really mad about it. And so the next morning, Veronica and JD show up at Heather Chandler's house. Heather Chandler's sleeping off a hangover, and they whip up what JD refers to as a home remedy for her. And Veronica thinks it's going to be a prank, that they're going to feed her a disgusting concoction of milk and orange juice, and it's going to like just make her sicker after sleeping off a hangover. And then JD jokes that they should put, what is it, no rust buildup in the drink. They pour two cups, one of the poison, one of the just disgusting stuff. And then it's kind of unclear how Heather Chandler ends up drinking the poison that kills her, and she convulses into spasms and collapses through the glass coffee table. I'm sure you you have discussed that like that scene set back the progress of glass coffee tables for about 25 years. I cannot tell you how many people I've talked to who were like, I am never purchasing a glass coffee table because I will trip over something and go Heather Chandler straight through it. I see that happening. But that's kind of the page 30 of this movie, right? I mean, that's the exciting event, the accidental dash slash murder. It's not really clear of Heather Chandler that gets this whole like, wow, this is a movie about a series of killings in a high school in motion.
So how implicit is Veronica in the murders? I mean, based on how you kind of portrayed potentially JD being in her head, mm-hmm. this might change, you know, how she's usually seen.
Yeah, I don't know. Like that's a really good question. I think the movie leaves it dangling for a reason, and I think it's good that it does. Like, I think this is – Heather's is set up as a dark comedy. And I think it works very well as a dark comedy. I think it works well as a lot of other kind of movies too. I think it feels a little bit like those, like the movies that would come in the decade to follow that were based on sort of lurid, you know, lurid gothic young adult novels like I Know What You Did Last Summer. I think Heather's feels very much like a Lois Duncan novel. I think Heather's is also like, I mean, Heather's is also undoubtedly a teen movie. I mean, it's a certain kind of teen movie. If Heather's were music, it's a little bit like punk because it's kind of in reaction to something else. But it's also like, it's part of a little subset of 80s teen movies that really begins with Over the Edge at the beginning of the decade and ends with Heather's, where like, in these movies, like, they aren't John Hughes movies where it's fundamentally good kids trying to do good things. It's kids that are human, warts and all, and essentially live in a society where they are seen as fugitives and criminals. Or in the case of Heather's, like, patronized like bunny rabbits. Another one of my favorite lines from that movie. But so, I feel like I wandered about 75 degrees afield from your question. But like,
So, well, let's talk about JD's dad because, you know, and it feels like he's got an interesting relationship with his dad and the death of his mother. Is there any validity to the argument that JD's penchant for death and destruction stems from this generational trauma?
Maybe, but I think first of all, like I don't remember who the actor is who plays JD's dad. That is one of the great like one scene walk on roles of like the decade. Like, and if Heather's had a higher budget, they would have like in a perverse way they would have like given like they would have given that role to like some like nice guy actor. They would have given that role to like Tom Hanks or Will Ferrell or something like that, and that would have been like super comically delicious in a really dark way. But like, there's definitely like, I mean, Heather's does great scenes with the grownups and the scenes with JD and his dad and the scenes with Veronica and her parents seem to be like two halves of a whole, where the parents and the kids are just talking past each other.
Yeah.
Where like people say things where it's clear they're not listening to the other one. And so I feel like, I don't know. Like, I think that possibility is dangling out there enough so we could interpret Heather's in the way you're saying. But I also like the idea of, like, personally, and this is just me being a selfish viewer of this movie, like, I like the idea of JD sort of springing forth from the womb as a nut, you know? Like, I kind of like that better than having an explanation for it that his father is a bigger nut and was responsible for the death of his mom.
So while rewatching, I was very struck by how the movie tackles teen suicide and school violence. Do you think this kind of movie would get made today?
Yes. I don't think it would look or feel like Heather's, but I think there are definitely movies being made today that not only tackle these really tough issues, and some of them are issues we just don't see as difficult to, we don't have to have a very special episode for them anymore. I mean, the great Netflix, you know, teen movie, the half of it that came out like a year or two ago is like, you know, the page 60 of that movie is the main character decides she's gay and in love with another girl. And like, and that would be a very special episode during the time of Heathers. And in this movie, no, it's just like, what happens next? Like, it's just the natural progression of the story of the half of it. I think Heathers would have to look different. I think it would probably have to be a little slicker. I think the great teen movie Dope that came out 5 or 6 years ago is essentially Risky Business set in the 21st century. But it doesn't, you know, it has a very kind of slick music video quality to it. In that case, it's, and in fact, it's kind of, even though it is that way, it's more grounded in reality than Risky Business is, which, because thanks to the Tangerine Dream soundtrack, feels like sort of a fever dream of an 18-year-old. It would feel very different, but it could totally be done. I am of the philosophy that that the period that Heathers comes from birthed the era of teen movie making that we are living in now. It was not a period that came and went, and there haven't been any good teen movies made since Heathers. That's just nonsense. Like,
so in our episode, we discussed how the popular kids were all wealthy and privileged. Like perhaps if they had some hobbies, no one would end up dying in this movie.
I love that. I listened to that episode and I love, like, I'm a big, like, believer in extracurricular activities. Like, I did more of those than go to class when I was in high school. And so, like, I'm a big believer in, like, and like, you know what? Like French club is a solution to most of society's ills. Like,
so do you think that the socioeconomic stratification of these characters plays into the murders? What is the writer trying to say here?
I think that's definitely part of it. And I think Dan Waters, who wrote this movie, is both dealing with the realities of making a teen movie in the mid to late 1980s, which are your villains were like, you know, a guy with a severe side part, you know, probably named Bobby with a sweater tied around his neck. Like, by the way, it is if that person tormented you in high school, it is a fabulous cosmic pop culture retribution that character in Valley Girl who plays Julie's boyfriend, the great character actor Michael Bowen, goes on to play the neo-Nazi gang leader in Breaking Bad as a grown-up. Like that's kind of exactly how that should have happened. But I think, like, it's part of the reason, like, one of the things Heathers does so beautifully is, like, it reminds us that villains are often more interesting than heroes. Mm. And villains are always much more a reflection of the times we live in than heroes are. So I think there was probably a certain amount of outside pressure on Heathers that, like, okay, well, the villains got to be the rich, popular kids. Like, we can't put the heroes got to wear black and ride a motorcycle and look like someone from a slightly another time. And no joke, you know, no surprise that they called him Jason Dean, haha. But like, and the villains got to wear Letterman jackets. Like, fine. But there's also like, I think Heathers is also playing very much with it has a real kitchen sink approach to like to every high school cliche you can think of, and so I think like Heathers released 5 years later, Heathers two or three drafts down, you know, in Heathers with more money, villains could have ended up as something else. Mm. Like,
so at the end of the day, we always have to ask this question: if you had to pick one person or thing, it could be a concept, that is to blame for the murders in Heathers, who or what would that be?
Oh, this is fun. Like, I got to pick something like you guys haven't, well, that wasn't on the board already, right? Like,
no, you can, it can be whatever you think at the end of the day we should have picked as the thing to blame.
Oh, okay.
So you're our expert. We,
oh, are you sure that's what you want?
Yeah.
Okay. okay. So, I think, like, I like where you and I were going with this conversation at the beginning, that maybe what we're witnessing here, this movie should really be called The Fall of the House of the Heathers. And so maybe what's to blame, is the governmental structure of the Heathers.
Wow.
and the mistake of allowing a fourth non-Heathers person in. Now, that sounds like an argument for racial purity, and we should not make that argument. That's gross, actually,
no.
But we shouldn't. But maybe what's to blame is the lack of recognition from the Heathers on how tenuous their hold on power actually was. The arrogance and ignorance of the Heathers, not realizing that there was actually room in their stranglehold on Westboro High.
It was a managerial error at
yes.
the end of the day.
Yeah, well, it was the mistake that all kings and queens make.
That's right.
That no monarchy is absolute.
Wow. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for bringing your expertise to the table, and we are going to have to discuss this. But thanks for helping us get to the bottom of who's to blame for the murderous events in Heathers.
Rebecca, it was my pleasure. Thanks so much for asking.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hello, Rebecca. Hello, Alarmy.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hello, everyone.
It was such a pleasure to have Kevin on our show. I mean, he just dropped so many, what would you say, like clarity bombs on the movie?
I love clarity bombs. That's what the experts always drop.
I mean, where he was going and where he ended up, I couldn't have been more pleased. I honestly wanted to say that I wanted to, Shakespeare really missed an opportunity to write the play about the three daughters of King Lear.
Yeah.
That was my thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his clarity bombs were also really, they were really well dropped, and they were scattered in such a way that in the end they formed the word, what was it, government of Heathers?
Yes.
Governmental structure.
Sure.
Was that governmental structure of the Heathers? And you know what I love so much about when we do a pop culture episode like this, in our minds, we're like, we're taking a little break from the really serious stuff. But then when you get a guest expert on, like Kevin, who's a scholar of this sort of pop culture, you go, wait a minute, Heathers is just as important as the sinking of the Titanic. Like, we're actually doing academic work here by analyzing this. And it is, like, pop culture is super important to, you know, how we exist in the world. So I just so much appreciate people like Kevin who build these amazing careers out of studying something that is so important, but a lot of people might just go like, oh, teen movies. But how important are teen movies truly to the world?
Totally. I couldn't agree with you more. And a part of me was like, I wish we had done this episode before we tackled Henry VIII or one of the big, you know, monarchs. I would have been, you know, looking into his way of running his own monarchy way more, you know, the minutiae, the everyday minutiae of the way he ran his kingdom.
And totally. Yeah, I mean, I still think the Titanic is a little more important, maybe, Amanda, than Heathers, the movie.
What?
Significance
of American history. No, like, but I think you're right in that it's like, these are the things that reflect society, and these are the things that also move culture forward in lots of ways because they set trends and that kind of thing. And if it's done well, you know, it's meant for us to really consider who we are in this moment.
Yeah, well said.
So, I mean, I totally agree with his verdict. And it kind of, before I just totally agree with him, I do want to point out how he was saying that JD could potentially have been in Veronica's head, which then goes back to the point of, is Veronica to blame then?
For letting him in her head? See, that's an interesting perspective because I was thinking, well, that gets her off the hook even more.
Interesting. I saw the opposite. I was like, oh, well, JD is just the manifestation of Veronica's evil side.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, he didn't even exist.
Yes.
Okay. I, for some reason, when I heard him say that, I was thinking like he's infiltrated her mind like this evil entity, but oh, like she manifested him. I see.
Yeah. And in the end, he commits suicide with the bomb, but really she like allows it to happen.
Oh my God.
She watches
like
him.
Her drop dead Fred, her imaginary friend.
Yes. Wait a minute. Is drop dead Fred Heathers?
Wait a second, guys. Barney is a dinosaur from our imagination.
Oh no.
I like that Barney is Chris's JD.
Dinosaurs are vicious. Dinosaurs are, yes.
That's right. That's right, Chris. They are vicious. And JD was vicious inside. If he is what we are implying that he is, then my feelings on Veronica felt very validated.
I know, because you weren't pleased with Veronica, and I think you're right that it's almost like you're not giving her enough credit by totally letting her off the hook, you know. And then alternatively, if JD is the Antichrist, that changes things too, because then, you know, then she didn't stand a chance.
Right. She was possessed. This is a horror movie.
It really is.
She's
possessed by a demon.
It was a horror movie.
I mean, yes. And I love that he mentioned that the, you know, the filmmakers had placed it in Ohio because it was a, I guess you could say, a response to all the other horror movies of the time that were taking place there. And I mean, he also said something about the filmmaker or the writer who, I don't know if you remember this, he said he wrote it while working at a video store, which then made me think of Dawson's Creek, which then made me think, is Dawson Leary the writer of? Okay, I'm going off on a tangent. Say,
is Dawson Leary to blame for Heather's?
Did it happen? Yeah, it's possible. You
I
just
think they
don't
might
know.
Exist in the same universe, those two IPs.
Well, okay, so thank you for letting me go off on that tangent.
Oh, anytime. Just to remind everyone, we sent JD to jail, and we slapped socioeconomic stratification, which was a listener suggestion from @artlikebread, and they did win an Alarmist Touch tool since we chose it for the big slap, which is en route in the mail.
That's right.
So are you thinking now, Rebecca, that you might want to change up the verdict? Because honestly, I don't think I can get that touch tool back now that it's already
sent. That's the beauty of the Alarmist. We just send off.
That's coming out of your percentage, Amanda.
I think since we can't take back the socioeconomic stratification, and also I still like that. I still think that is slap worthy.
Yeah.
But I do think we should. I mean, this is tough. Do we take JD out and we put the government structure? Here's what I think. We leave JD in the Alarmist jail, and as a side note, we say JD is potentially the dark side of Veronica. Okay. And we give a massive finger wag to monarchies.
Oh, okay. I like that.
And, you know, I just think absolute power is what's that saying? Absolute power is an absolute
corrupts
mess.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Absolute power is an absolute mess, you guys.
I love that. We got to put that on a shirt.
It's a really good reminder to all of us. So that's what I would do. What do you guys think?
I support it.
I'm into it. I think it's a good idea. He was also saying, though, you know, the governmental structure. So monarchies aren't, you know, governments aren't always monarchical.
Right.
Right. So even a democratically based government, although it makes you wonder, maybe democracy if there was a democracy for who the Heathers were, you know, the cool crew was at school, you know, there might be more of more fairness, more equality, a little less of that social structure that is so destructive. What do you think, guys?
I do.
So I agree, basically. Yeah. I'm just saying I agree.
It's almost like Heather's, it's a monarchy, but it's also a dictatorship.
True.
Yeah.
True. I guess monarchy, we're saying it's bestowed upon, it's, you know, handed down through lineage, right?
Generationally, but then also wealth is.
That's true. That's true. It's, well, look, it's they're the all in Heather. The soup. Yeah, that's what's to blame. I was saying, like, the monarchy, dictatorship, they're all like in the same soup.
Yeah.
And you know what they say about soups? Yeah, there's a bunch of different things in them, but you eat it as a whole.
Yes, I have heard that.
Yeah, me too. I've definitely heard that too.
Okay, great. So we'll put that on a shirt and we'll, I think, stick to the verdict.
Okay, and then just everyone know we're wagging our fingers at monarchies.
That's right. And dictatorships and absolute power is what we're wagging our finger at. Okay, so I feel good about that. I think we're ready to close the book on who's to blame for the murders in Heathers. And we thank the Alarmy for coming with us on this ride.
Yeah.
Now, tune in next week because we are discussing the 2003 European heat wave.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.